you can touch many by doing that. If you'd like to do that on your visit, you're more than welcome to do that. We actually have a Bible study up there on Thursdays in Miss Johnson's section, and at 1:15 on Thursdays. And I had a lot of fun. We just kicked that off. And I tell you, it's really, really fun. If you want to come to a study, we're going to expand those weekly studies there to maybe have three in the different sections of the building for all those who want to participate. And I'm really beginning to enjoy this more than I could ever imagine. You know, you get to see a whole bunch of people. If you want to save gas, but you want to serve God, one stop, you get all the fellowship you want in one stop. And I encourage you to do that. I want to read to you something. I'm going to try to encourage you quite often in the difference in the lives that you're making for these individuals. There's a man named Herb Stevenson, if you could turn to that. He wanted us to show the picture to capture the joy that he has. We came across him by accident. He wasn't on our list. He was a hold up in his room. He's been there for more than a year. And he was, when I came into his room by accident, I felt, well, I said, are you so-and-so? And I looked, it was the wrong room. He says, no. But just the sight of having someone interact with him really lifted his day. And so, you know, after visiting with him, I decided that he was a person of interest I wanted to focus on. If we're going to reach out to those who are hurting, those who are lonely, he was definitely a candidate. I talked with Brian Hauer and Bernice Wright and a lot of other people. And he was kind of moved up a bit on the visiting list simply because I wanted to see what a difference your fellowship with this man can make. Well, he's not only out of his bed, but now he's wheeling around. He doesn't even look like the same individual. He smiles all the time. He's very much filled with joy. He was actually singing with us on Sunday. I want to read with you, or read to you, a note that he wanted read to the congregation. Now, what it was like, what it's like now, what it was like before, and how much he appreciates what you're doing for him. Keep in mind, he had no visitors for a year. One of the few relatives he has had said to him, you know, maybe you're better off just dying. That was the last time you ever saw that relative. That's devastating. Here's what he writes to you, the congregation of Camp Hill. I appreciate the company, the love, and the hope that you all give. Before you came, I felt dead inside. I had no visitors. It was like I was non-existent in a non-existent world. I had no feelings. It was complete loneliness. I never thought a human being could feel that way. Your visits give me insight. This is part of my rehabilitation to coming back. Thank you so much. That's what he said about you on Thursday. And he wants to encourage you to keep encouraging him. Every week I'm going to try and share a story like this because you have changed the lives of dozens of individuals. And if that doesn't encourage you back, as Paul said in Philippians, when he talks about encouragement, when he refers to it, he says that you may also encourage me. See, encouragement is reciprocal. And so if you need to be encouraged, go. You'll find it. You'll find it in what's considered one of the darker places of society where the loneliest people in the world are waiting to visit. And if you know you can make a difference in their life, then you will embrace the fact that they will make a difference in your life as well. So I want to commend you for the job you've done. I want to encourage you to go up there today. I know it's Mother's Day. That's why we've given you 3 hours to get home and eat and come back. But if you can go up there today, I'd really much appreciate it. If you cannot go up there, today, but you'd like to stay 10 minutes and just help load the platters up downstairs, feel free to do that. We have so many cookies down there that you've made. Those care workers are really looking forward to that. You know, after visiting with many of them, a lot of times they feel like, you know, like they're forgotten. Not today, they won't. Today, they'll feel appreciated. Particularly those moms who won't be able to be with their kids today because they're working. With that in mind, let's talk about the lesson we have today. Today is the day we set aside in our country to honor our mothers. And in light of this, I would like to look at five mothers from the Bible that stand out to me and apply five lessons that every mother or young woman that might someday become a mother will embrace in their own lives. Today's sermon is titled, Famous Mothers of the Bible and the Lessons They Teach. Let's start out. Number one would be the first mother, Eve. She's the mother of first. She was the first to bear a child. Genesis 4, verse 1 and 2. Adam lay with his wife, and she became pregnant and gave birth to Cain. And she said, with the help of the Lord, I have brought forth a man. And later she gave birth to his brother, Abel. She was the first to ever go through the suffering of childbirth. She was the first to endure diapers, or breastfeeding, burping, teething, other chores with being the first mother. She would have likely had the privilege to witness the first smile of her babies, the first baby laugh, the first word, the first steps, the first questions of a child, the first look on the baby's face when she bites into a sour fruit, you know. All those were first in mothering, and she would have been the first to see it. She was the first nurturer of children, and I'm sure she enjoyed it all. She was the first and only one to bear the title Mother of All Living. That's what her name meant. Genesis 3, verse 20. He named his wife Eve because she would become the mother of all living. If you're the first mother on earth, and you and only you can be called the mother of all living. You might have a name, Eve, but it is not applicable. She was the first to bury a child. Genesis 4:25. Adam lay with his wife again, and she brought forth a son and named him Seth. And listen to what she says. God has granted me another in place of Abel since Cain killed him. She was the first one to ever go to the grave as a mother and have to bury a child. While enduring childbirth for this other son, her expression indicates the suffering that she had. She was the mother of first in many ways. But then there's Sarah. She's a mother in waiting. The first bit of information spoken about her was that she was barren in Genesis 11:30. And being childless, that was something that unjustly brought about a self-condemnation inside. The ancients reasoned if a woman could not have children, that God was perhaps punishing her for some evil in her life. That was not true of Sarah. God simply did not open her womb yet, for he had greater plans. Well, her desperation to have a child, even long into her aged years, is exemplified in Genesis 16, 1 and 2. It says, now Sarah, Abraham's wife, had borne him no children. And she had this Egyptian maid named Hagar. And what she did was, she said, now behold, the Lord has prevented me from bearing children. I'll get children this way. I'll give her according to the laws of Hammurabi, which that's where she's from, the land of Ur. She gave her handmaid to Abraham to bring forth a child in such a way. Well, that kind of backfired later on, because that wasn't what God was talking about. He said, she, Sarah, will bear a child. It wasn't long after that jealousy ensued. But years later, in Genesis 18, Abraham was once again promised an heir through his wife Sarah, to which it was written in the following. Genesis 18, 12 and 13. After Sarah heard it, she laughed to herself saying, After I've become old, shall I have pleasure, my Lord, being old also? And the Lord said to Abraham, why did Sarah laugh, saying, shall I indeed bear a child when I am old? She almost gave up that hope. But though it appeared she seemed to have let go of that dream, she later regained it, because it's written in Hebrews 11, verse 7. By faith, even Sarah herself received the ability to conceive, even beyond the proper time, since she considered him faithful who had promised. She latched back on ever so firmly after this moment. A year later, she gave birth to a son named Isaac and fulfilled the greatest ambition that she had, becoming a mother. Then there's Jochebed, number three, the mother of rescue. Her name means Jehovah is her glory. She was the mother of Aaron, Miriam, and Moses. And during her early time as a mother, Pharaoh carried out a law that said all newborn Jewish boys need to be thrown into the Nile and sacrificed to the crocodiles. Obviously, this would make one distraught. Her son, baby Moses, was scheduled for execution in such a way by drowning, but she was not going to let that happen. She placed him on a floating basket interwoven with pitch to make it able to float. And as this basket floats down the Nile, she believed things were going to work out in the end. She trusted God. She glorified God. And obviously, under this great stress, what would seem to be considered radical, she trusted in the grace of God, and baby Moses was discovered by Pharaoh's daughter with the following text, Exodus 2, 6 through 9. When she opened it, she saw the child, and behold, the boy was crying, and she had pity on him. This is one of the Hebrews' children. Then his sister said to Pharaoh's daughter, shall I go call a nurse for you of the Hebrew women, that she may nurse the child for you? And guess who she hooked up? Moses' mom. She ended up being paid to do what she would do anyway for free. So not only did God cause Moses to be raised in this family, to be taken care of and not killed, but God also supplemented the family income. We do have a marvelous and great God. God worked it out for her. And she had not only ended up being the nursing mother, but she brought great glory to God through her son. What about Hannah, the mother with a vow? Hannah was yet another childless, aging woman, and she was praying to God fervently. She went to the place of prayer. She was praying to God, making a vow. And her vow, she said, O Lord of hosts, if you will indeed look on my affliction, your maidservant, and remember me, and not forget your maidservant, but I will give your maidservant a son, then I will give him to the Lord all the days of his life, and no razor shall come upon his head. Pseudo-Nazarite vow of number six. She continued. She said, I will dedicate this child. God, you give me a child. I want to be a mother so much that if you provide me a child, you open that womb, I will dedicate this child to you. That is an incredible statement. She continued this until Eli, the high priest and judge of Israel, saw her praying. And she was so fervent in it, he thought she was drunk. And when she explained, there was this deep supplication pouring out of her heart, that this was so serious to her. Eli turned to her and said, go in peace. May the God of Israel grant you your petition that you have asked him. And she said, let your maidservant find favor in your sight. So she went away, and her face was no longer sad, because the high priest granted her that request. Well, guess what? She gave birth. 1 Samuel 1:20 came about in due time after Hannah had conceived. She gave birth to a son. She named him Samuel because why? I have asked him of the Lord. Process of weaning a child. The process takes usually in the ancients about 24 months. Some in other ancient cultures go up to 4 or 5 years and then make the cover of Time magazine. But I'll stick with the 2-year process. Samuel would have been about 3 years old because when she returned to that yearly sacrifice following the normal weaning process, she dedicated him fully to God as a priest and as a prophet. He would go on to become one of the most godliest figures in the Bible. When she turned that newly weaned child over, it made it possible, with the godliness he embraced, being fully dedicated, that we could even discuss him today. Mary, the mother of Jesus, number 5. She was chosen by God to be the vessel of embodiment of our Lord Jesus Christ. Likely a teenager, she would have had to endure ridicule as a fornicator. John 8:41 seems to indicate that. And when you became pregnant before your marriage, they can count months like we could as well. She was willingly felt that it was worth the task at hand. Luke 1:38, Mary said, "Behold, the bondslave of the Lord, may it be done to me according to your word." She internalized the moments of Jesus' life just like a mother. When shepherds announced the praising angels of Christ, she internalized it, Luke 2 verse 19, just like a mother. But Mary treasured all these things, pondering them in her heart. Luke 2:33, it states that both her and Joseph were amazed at the things that were being said about her child. And when witnessing his teaching abilities as a 12-year-old, it says in Luke 2:51, and his mother treasured all these things in her heart. She was just like an average mother. You internalize your children in your heart. She was often following him around in the ministry, just like a mother would do. She was with him at Capernaum in a synagogue when he was rejected by his fellow residents in Matthew 12:46. She was there when he carried out the first miracle in John chapter 2, verse 1 and 2. She said, "Do what he's asking you to do." She was there the day that they nailed him on the cross. John 19:25-27. But standing by the cross of Jesus were his mother, his mother's sister, Mary the wife of Clopas, and Mary Magdalene. And Jesus saw his mother and the disciple whom he loved standing nearby. He said, "Woman, behold your son." Then he said to his disciple, "Behold your mother." And from that day on, John the disciple took Mary into his home as an adopted mother. She took great interest in her son, just like any mother would do. You don't have to exalt Mary for any reason at all, other than to say that she was just like all those other moms out there. She loved her son. And that's, I think, beyond loving God, that would be one of the greatest marks you could ever leave in history. So, with this in mind, 5 worthy lessons I want you to take with you today. 5 lessons. Here's the first one. From Eve, always be prepared for the unexpected. Always be prepared for the unexpected. Children bring all kinds of surprises, don't they? I mean, you can read all the books that you want to read. You can go to all the parenting classes that you want to go to. And they might help you a bit, but being the mom, you're going to have kid Jack in the Box. There are going to be things that are coming up, things you cannot be prepared for. That's why I don't like guidance counselors in schools that have no kids. Honestly, you know, God had it figured out when he was talking about leadership. They need to have a family. Because how can you help people and understand if you don't go through the process yourself? Well, just as important, how can a mom really fully experience a mother relationship from Amazon.com? It's not going to happen. You receive that when you're a mother. But when those unexpected things happen, just be prepared. And you can be prepared for them by praying every morning. God, I don't know what you have planned for me, but I'm ready to take it on. I think that I am more than a conqueror. Number two, Sarah. Lesson from Sarah, treat every child like a promised child. Treat every child like a promised child. If we did that, if we treated every child, I mean, because children have different needs. Some children need a more stern discipline. Some children, you know, maybe they learned the lesson earlier. Sometimes, if you think all your children are alike, I mean, if you have identical twins, they're not even alike. They're not. They may be able to swap a kidney without rejection drugs, but their souls are different. Their minds are different. Their thoughts are different. Their giftedness are different. But the one thing they all have in common, whether you have septuplets or one child, treat them all like the promised child. Because children are a blessing from the Lord. And if we do that, if we're able to look at all of our children, and moms, this is incredibly important. Look at each of your children. Preferential treatment. Don't be like, who am I thinking of here? Don't be like Rebecca and show favoritism. You can see favoritism written all over that. Be absolutely fair by being able to look each of your children in the eyes and say, you are my promised child. Because a child who leaves the home with a promise leaves the home with a future. Treat every child like a promised child. Jochebed, lesson from her, trust God when tough times come. Trust God. Sometimes mothers can tend to be micromanagers. Dads can be too, but if the mom's a micromanager, then he gets lumped in too. But moms tend to rescue. They try to try to take the biggest steps that they can, and they get frustrated. Don't ever forget, when the times are tough, when you think you're at the end of the rope, someday you might have to put that child in the basket and say, God, we'll take care of you. Sometimes you, and I'm not saying little kid, don't go and say, Doug's saying put kids going down the river. We're talking about the big kid. Okay? What I'm saying is you have to be prepared to let that child go and see where God will take that child. You're always going to be that child's mom. But when you let that child go to God, then that child really is the healthiest. Trust God when those times get tough. But you also need to learn the lesson of Hannah. Make sure that you fully dedicate your child to God. Fully dedicate your child to God. There are so many things in the world that are calling your sons and daughters into the world. There are so many activities. You know, there's PTA, all different kinds of sports. I mean, all those things might be good. But sometimes you have to dedicate them to God. Involve your kids in the function of the youth program. You don't have to turn your child over to Eli, but you turn your child over to God in making sure their calendar is booked with God. Making sure that their little checkbooks are booked with God. That brought me great joy to see the next children up here today. You know, there will be many children helped over there in Zambia because of it. That's just one thing. Every parent, those little decisions are just as important. When you're planning to schedule out, if something's going to habitually take you out of the youth program, well, that's not turning my child out. Yeah, we do things in the world, but we do things as those entrusted to God in the world so that we can shine forth. Learn the lesson of Hannah. God gave you your children for you to give them to Him. Number 5, Mary, the mother of Jesus. Internalize your relationship with your child. Take all those special moments that you have now, those special moments when they go, I got that dada or mama. Okay, take that, internalize it, ponder it in your heart, store it away. Take those first steps, take those moments where you outshine, take those moments. And store them all in your heart. So later on, when they drive you nuts, you can go back through the photo album and get back on track. Later on, when they start pressing on that nerve or want to date that guy with the green and mohawk or, you know, whatever it is, it's like, what's going on here? You know. What am I going to say? Okay, go back through and say, oh, da-da, ga-ga, first step, first throw up on my shoulder, first, okay, I'm ready. Internalize that child in your heart. Internalize that relationship with your child. Because if you have that, later on, if that child begins to go astray, if you have that connection, you can pull them right back in. You can do it every time. Now, when we cover the fathers, moms, I'm not just heaping this on you. Father's Day, special surprise for the fathers. Okay? But since it's Mother's Day, I wanted to give you 5 great mothers from the Bible with 5, I believe, applicable lessons for your heart, for your mind, and for your soul. Mothers, thank you for all that you put up with. But more than that, thank you, God, for giving us hope. If you need to respond to the invitation for any reason at all, please do so while we stand in.